It's a project for Liverpool.
For the Liverpool Biennial.
For Liverpool Biennial.
Speciale Biennale di Liverpool. Quali sono i parametri necessari quando si progetta una biennale? Quali le esigenze? Luis Biggs, direttore artistico della Biennale di Liverpool, prova a rispondere con Touched, il tema di questa edizione. Insieme abbiamo parlato di arte, spazi pubblici, emozioni e ovviamente di Touched.
Most of my ideas come to me in the bath, so I think this one came to me in the bath. And everything comes out of conversation with other people, you know, you have all this soup of stuff in your head all the time, which you gather from other people, and some of it you put there yourself. And all the time, of course, I'm considering the situation of what we have here, what are the possibilities, what are the parameters for action. And one of the parameters is that we have two very different audiences. We have a local audience and we have an international cultural audience. And we want to reach both of these audiences at the same time. And I believe that's possible because I do think that if you choose a particular kind of art, then it satisfies, it's able to satisfy everybody. Okay, so the notion of satisfying everybody led me to think about Darwin, Charles Darwin, because 2008 was a year of Darwin, I think. Or maybe it was 2007, but anyway, we were all thinking about Darwin, and he was interested in what humanity has in common with the animals. And emotion, of course, is one thing that that animals express as well as humans, but it is completely universal language. You know, art is not a universal language, but emotion is a universal language because it's to do with being an animal. And so if you start with emotion, then it's possible to communicate to everybody. And I'm fascinated by the way in which the art world has turned its back on emotion. I mean, it's really hard to find a curator or a theoretician. It was really hard for years. For maybe two, three generations, it was really hard to find a theoretician or an art critic who wanted to talk about emotion, talk about anything other than emotion. But emotion was forbidden because emotion had been used by the demagogues of the totalitarian era in the 20th century. So we were faced with this extraordinary situation where artists want to make a political statement, but they don't dare use emotion to make a political statement. And if you attempt to make any kind of a statement without emotional content, nobody will listen. it's an absurd situation. So we have exhibitions like the Istanbul Biennial last year, which you took Bertolt Brecht as its kind of hero or starting point. And Brecht, who devised his theory of alienation in order to try to cope with emotion. But he took it for granted that there should be emotion to start with. he was, you know, a great artist because his theatre moves people. And it makes them think as well. So that's fantastic. But if you don't start by moving people, nobody will think anyway. It's an impossibility. So I was interested to address this curious neglect of emotion in art, both because I'm interested in it, but also as a way to make sure that we gather together an exhibition which was capable of communicating with a lot of people. Figurative painting has never stopped, and to that extent, it's always been a way to people's emotions. I mean, I think the question is better looked at as the relation between art and life. You know, this old, I mean, we can see in the whole history of art, there are cycles of art where artists and their patrons are in a close dialogue, and the conversation between them gets more and more refined and more closed to life and more about art. I mean, this has happened all through the history of art. And so you end up with a very academic art, which is there only for one or two patrons. You know, the artist is working for one or two people who understand because they're all talking the same very intense little language, but nobody else understands. And then the whole process is refreshed because an artist decides to be popular. And so Caravaggio comes, and suddenly the whole of art is refreshed because somebody has dared to say things which everybody understands instead of painting just for a tiny elite of patrons. And this cycle is going on all the time, but of course we have so many cycles happening simultaneously these days that you can't say at any one point which point of the cycle we are on. You can only say this art speaks to three people, this art speaks to 3 million people. You know, it's different. I think politics comes into everything, and you know, because I think that art and life are most interesting when they're closest together, and politics is a part of life, so you can't escape it. And I don't think you can escape politics in art either if the art is close to life. So yes, I have a political commitment myself, and that's the kind of art that I'm interested in, even if the art isn't openly about politics. Art that is made with feeling as a touched statement is going to be political, yes. There isn't very much good art around. I mean, I think it's important to say how difficult it is to make good art in public space, or good art in, particularly in public space. It's difficult to make good art anywhere. It's even more difficult to make good art in public space because public space is so crowded with so many other forms of communication all the time. But I like art, and it's important to talk about what is good art and what is bad art. I mean, I know in the end everybody's choice of art is their own, and I don't want to force my opinions on other people, but at the same time I'm motivated by what I think is good art. What I think is good art is art that communicates on different levels. So this business about communicating with the head, communicating to the heart, communicating to the hands. I am a whole person. I live my life through all my senses, not just through my head. If I spend too much time in my head, I start to die. You know, I need to live in my body. But there are so many artists, some of them making work in public space, who think that you can just communicate by making a statement which is an intellectual statement, or a statement which is a emotional statement, or a statement which is about stuff. These are very limited ways of looking at the world, and so for me that is not good art. So yes, I agree, there is a lot of art which fails to communicate with a broad public, but I would say that's because it's not very good. Talking earlier about the dialogue between the artist and their patron, you know, producing academic art, that's a community art. That's one form of community. This is an academic community producing academic art. Of course, there are also communities of people who are defined in many other ways. So, of course, a lot of art is produced which is very specific to a particular community. But if it's good, then it can transcend this community and speak to people who are from outside the community as well. If it's not good, then it only speaks to this community. So all art is community art. but if it's ambitious, then it can speak more widely to other people as well. The approach to art in public space has changed in the last 30 years. I mean, you know, in Liverpool we had a garden festival here in 1984, and they commissioned a lot of art for this space. You know, Documenta was founded as part of a garden festival. You know, there was a garden festival in Kassel, and the director of the Friedrich Jahnum that year decided he would grab the opportunity of all these people coming to the Garden Festival, and he would put on an art exhibition to try to reach this audience of gardeners. So this is how Documenta was founded. You know, for people for whom art is not a defined, you know, in England, as I'm sure in other countries, if you use the word art, maybe 60% of people say, okay, it's not for me, because they feel insecure around the word art. The same with classical music, the same with dance. People feel very awkward around these forms because they have always been told that these are not for them, or for whatever reason they don't like these things. I would rather move the discussion away from art and towards the way that people experience their environment, their life, the way they feel in the street, the way they walk in the street, the way they think about what they see in the street. Those are the kind of things that interest me to try to define how we can act in the street in a different way from the way that the cars are acting or the shoppers or the... you can only do a little at a time. Because, consistent with what I was saying earlier, that because I'm interested in where art meets the life, for Liverpool Biennial as an art commissioning agency, we never work alone. We don't start any project without already having a partner of some description, and a partner who is not from the art world. So we would start a conversation with maybe a school, or maybe the highways agency, the people who look after the roads, or maybe... So we start a conversation first to try to find out what the needs are, what are the parameters for this area. I mean, of course, we identify first an area that interests us because it's ugly and we want to make it beautiful, or because it's a contested space in some way. There's a lot of urban space which is contested. You know, the city government thinks it belongs to them, private developer thinks it belongs to them, and, you know, or the public want to use it, but the developer doesn't want the public to use it. And all those forms of contestation are very interesting spaces for artists to work in. And so we start by identifying such a space, and then we start to talk with the people who think that they own that space. And sometimes there's only one, but more often there are, you know, four different people or bodies, all of whom disagree with each other, probably. and these spaces are usually stuck. They're fixed in time. They can't move because of this disagreement between people. There's just a closure. And so what the role of art in this situation can be to allow people to talk to each other, and then things can move on. And this, maybe that's all that the artwork is. Maybe that's all that the artist has to do, is to just get people to talk to each other. And that can produce change, which in itself can be beautiful. Very often the new spaces are already lost to art. They are already closed. Because, you know, if a developer has just spent millions of pounds on developing, he doesn't want art. The place is finished. He designed, the place was in his head, or the architect said, or and it's done, and then it's finished. Why would he need art? And we don't want to force art on anybody. If he doesn't need art, then there's no point in being there. The old places, the beauty of decay, that's a good phrase. I mean, there is a beauty in decay. There is also an ugliness in decay. There is also a beauty in the newly regenerated, as well as sometimes an ugliness in the newly regenerated. But the reason that so much of what we do happens in old places is more because of this, the fact that the place is contested, that decay is often the result of lack of ambition from, or lack of agreement among the people who own that place. There is a lack, anyway. There is a need. Liverpool's getting better now. The decay of Liverpool started in the 1960s. In 1960, Liverpool had a population of 1 million. Now it has a population of 500,000. I mean, already by 1990, it had a population. In 30 years, from 1960 to 1990, it lost half the population. 50% of the population disappeared. And when that happens to a city, you have empty buildings, and we still have maybe 20% of the buildings in Liverpool are unoccupied, nobody living in them. But of course, the shops can't continue because the market has disappeared and the price of real estate falls. But from about 1990, there's been a lot of investment in Liverpool, which now the situation has stabilized and things are getting better. The first buy-in in 1999, we got permission to use an empty office building just behind the town hall, actually, very, very central place. And we used two stories of this huge building. And the developer later became a terrible enemy of ours against us. And the reason was that one of the visitors to the exhibition was a politician who remembered that the developer had taken some money from the government for the development of these buildings, and he had failed to develop the buildings, and he'd given us the building instead for temporarily. And so he was fined millions of pounds by the government for having invited us in, and we invited the politician. So it's a sad story. but this office now is used as an office, this one. Although actually it took another 8 years for the space to be occupied. But it's the Soho story. You know, artists move in somewhere, the value rises, the developer takes the thing back and sells it to a retailer, you know, or an office. It's the same story the world over, and I think it's, you know, this is change. This is good. It's good to have development. We need new language for politics, and we need politicians to think in a different way. Politicians think that the only thing which people are interested in are jobs and more office space. But actually, people want hope. People want to be able to believe in what they do. They want to be proud in their own city. And those things matter more than jobs or square meters of office space. But politicians never promise those things. We have no leadership, you know. Everybody thinks on a kind of 2-3 year time span is the longest horizon anybody is prepared to think about in the public sphere, in the commercial sphere. You know, nobody wants to think longer than 3 years ahead. And you know, I've been doing this job for 10 years, the job before I did for 10 years, and I know that only after 10 years can you make a difference. You actually have to invest a decade in doing something before you can change anything. So whatever politicians want, whatever, you know, is doomed to failure if they have a 3-year horizon. It can't work. It will never work. You have to think more long term, I believe.
Hai appena ascoltato una produzione di Radio Papesse. Il servizio è gratuito, ma realizzarlo comporta dei costi. Aiutaci a sostenerli. Vai su www.radiopapesse.org/sostieni. Basta davvero poco.